Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
This is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit our sponsor today. It's Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? This is an anti-aging book, as you can find at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. Get your copy of Dr. Daniels' book that has helped men and women look and feel 20 years younger. So be the first in your circle to get those envious inquiries and those admiring glances. So get your personal paperback book, free shipping for a limited time at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. So you no longer have to fear wrinkles. You can erase them at will. And it's Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? And as always, I welcome calls and questions at 914-338-0695. Now, I'm not sure about my reception, so if it gets a little squirrely, let me know, and I'll call in on my backup line. Okay, today's topic, controversial. Had a few emails on this one. It's home delivery, and I don't mean pizza. Now, the delivery of a baby is a devastating $10,000 to $18,000 expense, and that is if everything goes right. Now, on previous shows, we've talked about prenatal care, and so you've heard about how prenatal care can actually make everything go wrong. It can actually make things worse. So now I'm going to talk about the basics of do-it-yourself home delivery. And with the five-fold rise in maternal death over the past 25 years, associated with, and in many cases caused by, this medical approach to childbirth, this really could save your life or the one that you love. And so it's really worth looking at. Now, I've received emails saying or suggesting that it might be irresponsible, that home birth might not be appropriate for some women. So let me be clear. The goal of today's radio hour is to change the environment for women who choose to access the safety of home birth, to communicate the safety and simplicity of home birth. So relax. Not attempting to convince anyone they should have a home birth. That's a personal and private decision. I'm only suggesting that others who are not pregnant should be supportive of those who are pregnant who do make the choice to have a home birth. So this is a mission of communication, compassion, and understanding. And so that's really the big goal here. Now, where does this $10,000 figure come from? First of all, it's a hospital fee, which is between $4,000 and $10,000. A doctor's fee anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000. Newborn care between $1,000 and $3,000. This is if everything goes fine. And then there's a prenatal test, which can be anywhere from 3 to 15 ultrasounds, blood work, urine tests, and so on, another couple thousand dollars for the testing. The tests are separate above and beyond the doctor's bundled prenatal care fee. Okay. So it can be a pretty big deal. Now, I was trained in medical school. I've got to tell you my background because that's always helpful. You know, if I have any particular bias, which, of course, I always do. I was trained in medical school that home birth was a form of negligence, child abuse, and it endangered the health of the child to forego prenatal care. Now, I did obstetrical training in medical school and again in residency. Whether it was weighing the woman, taking her blood pressure, taking her urine a sample, doing blood tests, none of the tests we did had anything to do with the women or their babies. Outcome. And I found it very confusing. Every test we did was done because, well, the baby deserved to have everything done. And so I said, well, what if we find something? And I got the big shoulder shrug. So I was told that no intervention was available, and we were waiting for more research so in the future we could do something. Meanwhile, we're supposed to keep testing. So this is the academic environment. I was also taught that breastfeeding was not safe, and formula made by drug companies was scientific, nutrition, and superior. Of course, at that time, this is ancient times in the 80s, reports were surfacing from overseas that babies were dying as a result of eating formula. And so we were told that these babies were dying because mothers were ignorant and didn't mix the formula properly. Now, I became a little uneasy when I noticed that the ladies that rolled into the hospital emergency room with no prenatal care or anesthesia popped out their babies with no problem, generally in a matter of 1 to 3 hours. Still, I figured that the stuff I was being taught was backed by research. It was helping someone. Then it happened. As the song says, the happening. I became pregnant. I'll skip the details of my first pregnancy because they're uninteresting, except to say that I did absolutely nothing my doctors told me. In fact, I did the opposite of everything they told me, and it turned out exactly fine. So I became pregnant with my second child. Now, my pregnancies are all by artificial insemination. What does that mean? Oh, and I was celibate. So what does that mean? That means that there was absolutely no doubt as to the date of conception. And there was absolutely no doubt as to my due date. There just wasn't any because it was artificial insemination. Insemination, which was used once, maybe, no, just once because it took. That was it. So still, the doctor wanted to do ultrasounds. And so the second pregnancy, I gained, as I always did, a lot of weight, about 56 pounds, and I went overdue. I said to my doctor, well, aren't you going to do something? He said, no. What do you mean, no? I'm overdue. So at 43 weeks, and so I did a weekly non-stress test, which to me didn't make any sense at all. But anyway, that's what they did. And it's still a standard of care, by the way. So 43 weeks, I go into labor. Healthy mom, healthy baby. All of a sudden, I'm told my baby has a heart rate problem. A few tests, corkscrew to the brain later, emergency is declared, and a C-section is done, giving me the rationale that my baby's heart rate was not what it should be. Now, the product of this C-section was an African-American baby with perfect Apgar of 10. What has African-American got to do with it? Well, people who are African-American have darker skin. And to get a perfect Apgar of 10, you need white skin. Interesting. So this means the C-section was absolutely not necessary. The baby had no distress with the heart, the lungs, or anything. Now, of course, if you're a doctor, you would say, well, aren't you glad we did it anyway? I could have been, except I went on to develop an abscess, had a second surgery to correct the first unnecessary surgery, and 19 days later, I went home, too weak to even hold my baby or sign my name for 6 months. Now, not being a complicated person, I reason that I may not have done any better had I stayed home, but I probably would not have done worse if I just stayed home. And this really set me on the track of researching. Say, hey, what's going on here? But I also made the decision that with my next child, I was going to stay home. I was going to stay home, have this baby, and if God wanted me to die, guess what? Me and that baby were going to heaven or wherever he wanted to send us. I was going to go along with whatever happened. So you would think I was contemplating a serious crime. My mother and all my friends and my relatives, everyone was uniformly, to say that they were opposed would have been mild. And it was really quite a sale to convince my family to just go along. I mean, they thought I would die. Then I said, you know what, I'm ready for that. And they said, well, maybe the baby will die. So maybe he will, maybe he won't. And I said, well, there'll be blood all over the house. Well, okay, someone can clean it up afterwards. What if something goes wrong? You know, all these what ifs. So finally, you know, we made arrangements to put down, you know, a nice thick quilt so the hardwood floors would be fine. And And then, of course, there's my friends. One friend said, I'll park an ambulance right outside your house just in case. Another one said, I'll go to the hospital with you and be sure they treat you right this time, you don't get butchered. Another one promised to help and then, of course, didn't show up. But I had invited several people, so we had quite the assembly. Another one showed up but called my OB doctor to give a report. Well, boy, was he thrilled to know that the home birth was in progress. He never spoke to me again. But nevertheless, 2.5 hours later, I had a healthy 8-pound, 8-ounce baby girl with absolutely, I just can't tell you how uneventful the whole thing was. It was almost comical that it was just so easy. So I'm trying to say, just be supportive. So let's briefly review the myths of prenatal care. What's a myth? A myth is something that's believed to be true, but actually, on closer examination, simply is not. There's just no evidence to support it. First of all, prenatal care improves birth outcomes. This is false. There are no scientifically credible studies that show this. Prenatal care improves the health, that it improves the health of mother. It just doesn't. The maternal mortality has been, like I said, it's increased fivefold in the past 25 years when prenatal care has become the norm. In other words, 80% of maternal deaths are due to medical intervention, and the number is growing. Now, what's another thing that might support this is whenever the mother dies in childbirth, there's always a lawsuit. And guess what? They generally win. Because when you go over the record, it's very easy to find what was done along the way that led to the maternal death. Okay, next. Prenatal care reduces infant mortality. This is absolutely false. there's absolutely no evidence of this at all. Many studies have been done, and the best they can come up with is there might be a benefit, but it's too small to measure. Now, the birth outcome, then, is what determines a birth outcome? All this research, and I've just been pouring through all the studies, seems to be determined by the woman's desire to have the baby. So an unwanted baby has a greater risk of low birth weight, poor outcomes. Why? Well, he doesn't want the baby. It's like, I'm not going to change my diet. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I don't want this baby. And so inability of a woman who does not want to be pregnant to have an abortion is a real issue. Or the inability to figure out why doesn't she want this baby and is there something that can be done. A lot of times a woman might not want a baby, maybe because she feels she can't afford a baby. So maybe there was a change in her circumstance or her ability to afford a baby that, you know, might improve the outcome. So in other words, a similarly situated wealthier woman would have an abortion and therefore would not have a low birth weight baby. Am I supporting abortion? Absolutely not. What I am supporting, though, is making babies more affordable, and having your baby at home is definitely the first step in affordability. I think many families, if they could have a baby for a cost of $250 a baby, they'd be a lot more relaxed about having, say, larger families. So effectiveness in prenatal care is overestimated, as the people most likely to engage in it are those least likely to have a poor outcome. And so this is a study by Dr. Kevin Fischella. And it says, does prenatal care improve birth outcomes? A critical review. This was done in 1995. And basically, he says, prenatal care has not been demonstrated to improve birth outcomes. It just hasn't been demonstrated. But he goes on to say we should do it anyway. Okay, thank you. And then the Journal of Econometrics in 2005 published a study. And they found that as a result of transportation issues, less care was given to women who are pregnant. However, it was not possible to trace an outcome to this. What they did find, though, was that women who quit smoking had a better outcome. So then Dr. Bernstein, 2002, argument for prenatal care. He says, by the time a pregnant woman enrolls in prenatal care, the ultimate outcome of her pregnancy may be sealed. Okay, so I hope this is really helping you figure out that or accept the concept that at least a home birth compared to a hospital birth might be, in terms of the safety of the baby and mother, safety of the baby, you might say it's equivalent. Safety of the mother, there's no question that skipping prenatal care and hospital delivery definitely saves lives. Okay, so this is aimed at women who have pregnancies that they want to be pregnant and who want to have a healthy baby. Because if you don't want to be pregnant and you don't want to have a healthy baby, then you're probably not going to do well with the home birth or do what you need to do to have a healthy baby. So, Beth, if you've not been the victim of prior medical genital mutilation in the form of a C-section or other mutilation, you're probably pretty low risk, and, you know, you really go for it. So this is not for the faint of heart. This is definitely a balls-to-the-wall solution that will save your life and the baby's life as well. So this is my opinion, not medical advice. Obviously, you're free to do as you wish. The only thing I'm very firm about is the need to support women who do decide to have this, even if it's not what you would do. Okay, so you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit our sponsor, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? This anti-aging book is available at VitalityCapsules.com/truth-files. Get your copy of Dr. Daniels' book that has helped men and women look and feel 20 years younger. Be the first in your circle to get those envious inquiries and those admiring glances. And get your personal paperback edition with free shipping for a limited time. And as always, you can call in at 914-338-0695. Now, as I mentioned before, there are two benefits to prenatal care, that were established in the 90s, and I'm surprised they haven't been mentioned in more recent studies. So if a doctor tells a woman to quit smoking or quit drinking alcohol, and she does this, her pregnancy outcome is improved. But there is no other intervention that impacts the baby's outcome in a positive way. So in other words, you can just substitute a quit smoking campaign or a sobriety campaign for prenatal care at I'm sure, a much lesser cost and much greater convenience and have actually a better impact. So let's get started. The meat of the matter here. So first of all, let's talk about when the lady gets pregnant. Because from a natural point of view, there's actually a lot that can be done in the prenatal period that will determine and facilitate the actual outcome at the end. All right. So let's say you're pregnant or the friend of yours is pregnant. First thing you do is establish a due date. And that just kind of gives you a date by which everything will be over. It's always nice to know when things are going to end. So it turns out that establishing your due date, the most reliable piece of information is your last menstrual period or the date of conception. Some ladies can have that information. And if you do, then your due date is more accurate than an ultrasound. It's more accurate than your doctor palpating or feeling your belly. So the woman actually has the most accurate due date. Once you get your due date, you just go online and say, calculate my birthday or my due date. And you'll have a calculator pop up. You'll pop in your dates. Boom, you'll get the baby's birthday. Very simple. Okay, so now we've got a birthday. But wait. How do we know we're really pregnant? Well, people say, well, I want to go to a doctor to get a pregnancy test. Did you know that the urine pregnancy kits they sell in the pharmacy are more accurate than the blood pregnancy test that your doctor does in his office? Yes, I was shocked to find this out. And so you don't need to see the doctor to diagnose your pregnancy. You can do that at the grocery store for about $10. All right. Now, what else is there to do? So you've got this birth date that you picked up on the internet using your most accurate information. For your information, your true birth date is 4 weeks before or 2 weeks after. So it's actually a 6-week range. And there's really not much advantage to the baby of being born on your calculated due date. No, she's not going to be any healthier or less healthy if he's born a week earlier or 2 weeks earlier. So relax. Now, the other thing you need to know is at 20 weeks, the baby should be, this ball should be at the level of your belly button, and you should feel a little movement. So this is just to reassure you, really, that's all it is. And if you're planning a home birth, weight gain is very, very important because your baby is being delivered by you. In other words, you need increased blood volume to circulate everywhere. You need the proper nutrients so that the transitions that have to happen, the baby can slide out, placenta can separate, Milk can come down, baby can start feeding, Pitocin is released, bleeding is stopped. All these complicated things are going to happen, but they can only happen if your body has gained enough weight. So the weight gain goal I like is 10 pounds in the first month. You really want to front load this weight gain, because when you front load this weight gain, you don't have things like vomiting during pregnancy. A lot of your first trimester issues are just not a problem. Next thing is, what about the diet? All kinds of diets you can follow. I'll tell you what I've observed. First of all, I've delivered my own baby at home and delivered three other babies at home for other women, watched a few home births, and then, of course, many hospital births. It seems to be the diet that works is diet of your choice. Whatever it is you're going to eat a lot of, that's what you eat. Now, what would be the restriction? The restriction would be to eliminate processed foods as much as you can, avoid genetically modified foods, avoid any instant foods, and cook from scratch at home. I recommend cooking potfuls of food and really eating a whole lot. What about cravings? Indulge your cravings. So eat lots of home-cooked food and indulge your cravings. And that makes for a very happy, fat pregnancy. And for home delivery, when I was doing home deliveries, I absolutely refused to deliver the baby of any woman who didn't gain at least 20 pounds. Now, she can give me her reasons. I didn't care what they were. But I knew that I needed her to gain at least 20 pounds so I could do what I needed to do. Or she said, so her body could do what I needed it to do so she and her baby could be healthy. So at least pack on that 10 pounds in the first trimester. Next. Eat all day and part of the night. And I tell women, just put a plate of food at the bedside at night. And when you wake up at night, eat something. Get up and go pee if you have to, but eat something. And if you are normal weight when you get pregnant, you want to gain at least 40 pounds. A little more is fine. If you're underweight, you want to gain enough weight to get to your normal weight plus 40 pounds. If you're overweight, then you just gain a minimum of 20 pounds. That's what your goal is, gain a minimum of 20 pounds. And you definitely want to reach that normal weight plus 40 pounds mark if you're not there. Okay, so what are the problems? Prenatal care that can be handled naturally. One is puking and throwing up. This responds very nicely to stopping the processed foods and to eating continuously throughout the night. If you do become dehydrated, you can hydrate yourself with a saline enema. That means put salt water in an enema bag. That's 2 teaspoons salt, 1 liter of water. Again, not medical advice. And you can let this run in. And what that's going to do is it's going to replenish your water so you don't get dehydrated. The other thing you can do is you can make a fennel tea. It's a tablespoon of fennel and about a quart of water, and just boil it for 10 minutes. Let the fennel settle to the bottom, the seeds, and sip the water, and that gets rid of vomiting and nausea. Now, some people get headaches during their pregnancy. If that's the case, then you need to increase your water intake, decrease the chemicals in your food. A nice headache cure is to put mustard over your upper lip where your mustache would be if you had one, an ice pack on your head, and that will cut it. The other thing to take a look at, if you're pregnant and you have a headache, is if you're getting constipated. If you're constipated, then you need to chuck down a bunch of prunes, and that will loosen things up for you. Now, some women also get tired during pregnancy. What should they do? Well, they should eat more, rest more, and work less. What about vitamins? This is really shocking. There's something called prenatal vitamins. In the 90s, I was charged with giving a rousing speech to a group of African-American women to convince them to cooperate with and seek out prenatal care. And I was also quite pregnant myself. And so I did some research and found that women who took their prenatal vitamins as prescribed by their doctor every single day of their pregnancy had worse outcomes, worse maternal outcomes, and worse fetal outcomes. That was really shocking. So I can say is, if you're inclined to take vitamins, why not go to the health food store and take some natural prenatal vitamins that don't have artificial color or chemicals in them. So that's really, really, really important. Next, you've got to increase your blood volume. You've got to make a lot of red blood cells. Now, if you're going to a doctor, you might buy iron pills. I say just get some beets, cook them and eat them. Tons and tons of iron in beets. And that will improve your iron, but also will strengthen your liver. So that's very important. Another excellent source of iron is blackstrap molasses. Now, Blackstone molasses has had a long and wonderful history in prenatal and pregnancy care. Dose is 2 tablespoons a day. This strengthens your uterus, increases the blood flow to your uterus. So when the time comes, your uterus can respond very nicely to your body's internal hormones, and you can have a nice, smooth, and quick, easy delivery. So that's blackstrap molasses, 2 tablespoons a day. You can go as high as 2 tablespoons twice a day. And you want to get the one that's less than 50 calories per tablespoon. And as I said, this is really an incredible tonic for the uterus and just really puts your body in control and makes for a nice, easy delivery. And molasses, just for your information, is filled with magnesium. And it's magnesium is what doctors give to prevent premature labor. So by taking blackstrap molasses, you've got that base covered up front. So it gives you lots of magnesium, lots of potassium, lots of calcium. So you're going to get a baby with some nice, strong bones and a good heart. So that's like a really a big bonus there. So you definitely want to get going on the blackstrap molasses. And we need station identification here. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit our sponsor, vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files, and get the anti-aging book by Dr. Daniels that has helped men and women look and feel 20 years younger. So be the first in your circle to get those envious inquiries and those admiring glances. So get your personal paperback book, free shipping at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. Now, next thing, okay, so we're doing our prenatal care here. And the next thing during the prenatal phase is sometimes you might get contractions. And if you get contractions before 20 weeks, it can be a problem. And so what you want to do is take a look at your diet. If you're eating hot foods, hot spicy foods, stop them. A lot of times that alone is enough to stop the contractions. The next thing you can do is use lobelia tincture, lobelia, L-O-B-E-L-I-A tincture, 1/4 to 1/2 dropper full in 1 liter of water. Mix it. Pour it into a douche bag and douche with this. And the lobelia, I'm sorry, do an enema with it. And the lobelia gets absorbed and gets absorbed into the blood, into the uterus, relaxes the uterus, and gives you time to fix your diet, straighten things out, and turn things around for you. Now, the next thing is, what if you go overdue? What if you're overdue? Now, you've calculated your dates, and they are accurate dates because you know when your last period was, or you know the night you conceived. So your date for pregnancy is absolutely accurate. This is important. Okay, so let's say your due date comes, your due date goes. You're like, oh my God, I am getting so big and so heavy and so fat and so huge. And a good test, of course, is if you can't get up out of a chair because you're so heavy. What do you do? The answer is you take a teaspoon of cayenne pepper in 1 cup of ice water, swirl the ice cubes, and drink it. You can do this as much as 3 times a day, but in my experience, labor ensues within 4 hours, and baby is generally born within 10 hours. So if you're post-dates, and cayenne pepper works wonders. I've used it several times, and it's never failed. Okay, so the next thing you want to take a look at is what about delivery? Okay, as soon as you decide you're in labor, how do you decide you're in labor? Now, that's a good one. The way you decide that you're in labor is that the contractions are every 3 minutes. If it's your first baby, I don't care if they're every 5 minutes, you're not in labor. But if they're 3 minutes apart, okay, now we're talking. As soon as you figure that out, that is when you need to eat a big meal because you've got work ahead of you and it may be a while. And drink about 1 to 2 liters per hour during labor. I mean, really drink. You can drink your favorite beverage. I would say your favorite juice, half strength, we'll do it. And the goal is 1 to 2 liters an hour. You don't have to meet that goal, but if you feel like drinking down a quart or a half gallon because you're really thirsty, definitely go for it. If it's summer and it's hot, definitely turn on the air conditioning if you have it or turn on a fan. If it's winter, definitely keep on the blankets and, you know, keep yourself very comfortable. And whoever's helping you, that's their job, is just to keep you comfortable. Okay. Now, I'm going to talk about things that you're going to use along the way. You can just kind of write them down and then make up your own little list of supplies. But you want to cover the bed with plastic if you're going to use a bed, or put a quilt on the floor. I put a quilt on the floor and used pillows. It was just so much easier to have a larger area to kind of roll around in or moving or whatever. You want to have 24 receiving blankets. He's like, "Doctor, how can I use 24 receiving blankets?" Don't worry, you'll use them. And you want a knit hat for the baby and some booties. Why? Because the baby can easily lose a lot of heat very quickly. And so you want to be able to get this kid wrapped up, conserve his heat so he doesn't get hypothermia. So that's really important. All right. Now we're getting to the meat of the matter here. This is where separate the men from the boys or the ladies from the women. All right. So you're now in labor. You've had your big meal, and you're drinking. The thing to understand about labor pains is labor pains come and labor pains go. And so what you do is when the pains come, you just kind of relax and meditate and realize that they're going to go away. They're temporary. And that you're going to have this temporary discomfort for a permanent improvement, which, of course, is a wonderful, healthy baby. So during labor, you need to understand home labor is absolutely nothing like hospital labor, and that's important to know. A woman who's in labor at home can dilate between 3 and 10 centimeters in 1 hour. This is even if it's the first baby. You can just dial it up and she'll be just open and the baby will just start sliding out. So that's really nice to know. So it's not this 24-hour period like they have at the hospital, although it can be, but usually it's not. Also, there's no need to do vaginal checks, because the more times you put your hand up a woman's vagina, the more likely there is to be an infection. So you don't need to really put your hand up there for any reason. And I'm assuming that you're doing this delivery with uneducated people. In my case, I insisted that they were uneducated. After I got butchered so badly at the hospital, I said, "Anyone who's had any training in pregnancy or delivery, please leave. You're not welcome." I didn't even invite them. So I'm assuming that you just have a bunch of people who are helping you out and who will care about you and just want you and the baby to be healthy. So they can sit and chat and, entertain themselves by counting contractions or whatever they want to do and making you comfortable. So maybe someone will prop you up with pillows, or if you want to lay down on your side, you can do that. Whatever position you like, that's the position. Now, boiling water. Always a good idea. So have someone boil some water. It should boil at least a gallon. And what do they do with this? They cut off 2 lengths of dental floss and toss them in the water and let them boil with the water. And they'll boil for about 30 minutes. And then they'll get the water boiling. You'll take one of the receiving blankets, dip it in the water, squeeze it out a bit, and then get it so it's warm but not going to burn anybody, and put it right in the perineal area. And that means the part between the lady's legs at the very top where the baby comes out. And that softens things up so that the baby's head can compress and smooth things out. Now, the person bundling the baby or handling the baby, you need to have 3 people present at least. One's going to be the baby handler. One's going to be helping mom with any comfort item she needs, whether it's making her warmer, making her cooler, bringing her something to drink. So that person has that job, and they're focused on that, and that's their job only. One person's focused on the baby, and that's their job only. Then there's a third person who's delivering the baby, who's focused on delivering the baby and the placenta. So everything gets kind of handed off here. All right, so things are dilating. You'll know that the woman is totally dilated because she'll give out a gasp, it'll be something like that. And that's, you're making progress. Now, I have to say, right to privacy begins at conception. And the fewer intervention of any kind you have, the healthier the baby is going to be. So, now when I was in the hospital, working in the hospital doing deliveries, the baby, as soon as the baby came out, that cord was clamped. and it was clamped as close to the baby's body as possible. And then, of course, cut was made, baby was handed off to the baby team. This is wrong, and most recent research shows this is very wrong, because one-third of the baby's blood volume is still left in the placenta. It needs to drain into that baby so he can have a very healthy 6 months of life, improve his survival, and reduce his need for medical intervention. So what do you do? You're at home now. Now, first of all, why did the hospital want us doctors to snip this cord like pronto and very close to the baby? Because they were selling the umbilical cord to the cosmetics industry. If you don't believe me, go to your cosmetics counter and ask, tell them you want to see their most expensive, most beautiful skin softening lotion, and you're willing to pay $100 a bottle for it. And read the ingredients, and you'll see baby placenta. Now, they would like to tell you that those placentas come from aborted fetuses. I'm here to tell you, a lot of them come from full-term babies delivered in the hospital. And the hospitals, again, the ones I worked at, were selling the umbilical cords and placentas to the cosmetics industry, unbeknownst to the lady. And so they were shortchanging the baby by cutting this cord too close, depriving the baby of blood, then taking him off the neonatal area and transfusing him and charging whoever's paying the bill for transfusions that obviously would not have been necessary had the cord cutting simply been delayed. So here you are at home. The answer is 2 minutes. Okay, wait a full 2 minutes before you cut the cord. So the baby's head comes out. What do you do? Honestly, it doesn't matter. Just relax. You can, you know, go around the neck, look for a cord, and then pull the cord up over the baby's head and pop it out so the baby doesn't drag the cord with him. So that's worth doing. Aside from that, you can just wait till the next contraction, because what's happening is the baby's chest is being compressed by the canal. All the fluid is being squeezed out of his lung, so he's going to be really ready to take a nice big breath, and you'll have a great entry. So you wait until the next contraction. You don't start pulling and tugging at things. The next contraction, and the mother, you tell her to tell you when it's going to come. She'll tell you, and you say, okay, great. That's your cue to catch the baby so it doesn't fall. And just so you don't have to catch the baby, I say it's best for the lady to be sitting on the floor. And she can sit any way she wants. Now, some women, excuse me, like to deliver on all fours. I had a patient who delivered on all fours. Another one delivered standing up with her knees slightly bent. And, I mean, I felt like a wide receiver, you know, catching this baby in all kinds of awkward positions. But be flexible with that. Whatever position the lady wants to deliver in, that is the correct position. So how do you catch this baby? First of all, you want to have a delivery blanket. I would say three blankets thick usually should be pretty good. And the head is already out, so you want one hand on the head. And then as the baby comes out, you lower that hand, and the rest of the baby falls into the second hand that you have. Now, relax. So at this point, you ask the lady to lay down. Any position she wants is fine. I recommend laying on her side, but it doesn't matter. Any position is fine. And so you want to immediately take the baby and move the baby to her breast. It doesn't matter which one, and latch the baby on. So that's the baby person and the comfort person coordinate that. Get a tit in that baby's mouth. This is critical. Why? Because as soon as you get that nipple in the baby's mouth, Pitocin gets released, and you avoid your postpartum hemorrhage. Okay? So this is a home birth, not a hospital birth. We don't have all this fancy-dancy stuff, so we got to use what we have. And so the baby is now latched on. What if you have a baby that doesn't seem like he wants to latch on? Well, that's where her husband / significant other / partner comes in. It's his job then to fondle her breast, whatever, you know, touch her nipples, you know, in whatever way she finds acceptable and pleasant. And this will release Pitocin. It'll help the uterus contract and expel the placenta. Yes. Now, you're going to wait patiently, not tugging on the placenta. You're going to be patient. You're going to wait. And you'll see some blood flowing out. It'll look to you like Niagara Falls, but it's not. And it's going to be pinkish blood. And that's normal. That's fully normal. And then the placenta is going to start coming. As the placenta comes, you have one cord in one hand, and you're pulling your hand away from the body as the placenta is coming. You're not forcing it, but you're just guiding it forward. As the placenta falls into your hands, you then rotate it. It doesn't matter clockwise or counterclockwise, but you rotate it. What this does is pulls out all the membranes and gets them to separate easily and quickly, and that's it. So meanwhile, you have somebody who's been keeping time here. And so 2 minutes after the baby's out, the person then gets handed a or takes a piece of the dental floss that was boiling in the water, remember? You take it and you tie it in a very tight knot at some point on the umbilical cord, preferably like 2 inches or 3 inches from the patient's, from the baby's body. Then, you tie another cord, another dental floss, 2 inches from that, tie it, and then you cut in between with some scissors that you've sterilized, and we've now got the baby out. But we're not quite out of the woods yet. So now what do we have to do? Okay, so you got the baby delivered. You want to bundle the baby up, wrap the baby up. Absolutely do not bathe the baby because the baby's got this vernix, waxy white stuff on him. Leave it there. Wrap the baby up, and the only thing the baby should be showing is the face, and that's so you can breastfeed. I would not worry about diapering the baby. You can, but I wouldn't worry about it. You've got this kid wrapped in like 3 or 4 thicknesses of receiving blankets. So for now, you can just let him breastfeed with mom. Meanwhile, the person down at the bottom end is going to take a look around, see if there's any bleeding, how much bleeding. If you've got drip, drip, drip bleeding, it's not a problem. If you've got a river of bleeding going on, then what you want to do is you want to get that baby sucking a little more. You want to get the father / assistant manipulating the breast a little more, gentle, gentle, gentle. And a lot of times that will cut the bleeding off. And next, if you feel that there's still bleeding, you can give a teaspoon of cayenne pepper with water, have her drink that down. And usually that stops the bleeding. Now, my background is not obstetrics or midwifery, so a lot of people use lady slipper and all kinds of other herbs, and that's nice. I'm not saying they do or don't work. I'm just saying it's not what I've used. So now we've stopped the bleeding, got the baby out, and now what do we do? Well, now is the time to focus more on getting the baby, getting that nipple in the baby's mouth and getting the baby to breastfeed. If you don't feel like the baby's breastfeeding well, then it's okay to give the baby a bottle of water with 1/8 teaspoon of salt in 1 cup. One cup of water. And the baby can take that via bottle just so it doesn't get dehydrated. This is not going to interfere with breastfeeding because the baby's going to say, you know what, yes, I'm thirsty, I'll take this, but I really want breast milk. So he will still would rather make an effort to get milk out of his mother. Okay, what else do we want to say? Okay, we got that, got the baby out, got the placenta out. You're going to want menstrual pads. I'm probably going to use 2 or 3 deep. And so the bleeding that you should see is equal to a period or a heavy period. So changing the mother's menstrual pad, say, every 3 to 6 hours is perfectly fine. Now, the things that you've done is you've not had prenatal care. What does that mean? You haven't had any blood tests. So mother's full blood volume is available. She's been eating beets and taking blackstrap molasses. What does that mean? She's been getting plenty of iron and making extra blood volume. So if you do these things to pick up her blood volume prenatally, then at delivery you have a wider margin. You can lose a pint or even 2 pints of blood, which most people couldn't tolerate. I mean, if you're a lay person, you've never seen a pint of blood spill on the floor from a human being before, you'll just like panic. But if you do these things prenatally, you build up the blood volume so that what the doctor in the hospital might call a postpartum hemorrhage can take place at home, and it's blood on the floor and no one's even worried about it because the amount of blood left in the mother is more than sufficient for her needs. So that's the if everything goes right scenario. So we have a few more things with the everything goes right scenario. Postpartum, you want to have a cleanup crew because it is going to be a mess. Either help the mom to bed if she wants to go to bed, or help her into a chair, or if she wants to lay where she is. Whatever she wants, that is the order of the day. And as soon as the baby is born, depending on the time of day, you want to have a nice meal ready for the mother to eat. And so that's important. And also it would be nice to have some kind of postpartum massage where she can get a nice massage of her body, or, you know, apply comforting lotions, that kind of thing. And then for the baby, do absolutely nothing until at least 24 hours. You want to leave that Vernix in place to protect him. And then once he soils his first set of receiving blankets, you want to take those away, then put a diaper on him, and then give him a second set of receiving blankets about 3 or 4 thick. Okay. Now there's more to do. So we got this kid out, got him into the world. Now we have another challenge. What do we do now? How do we make this kid or integrate him to society? What I would say is you don't not to start, because now you've got this baby. He's born. He's alive. The next big cause of death between birth and 1 year of age is, believe it or not, immunization complications. What does that mean? That means sudden infant death syndrome, crib death. These all appear to be vaccination complications. So the next step is how do you avoid this? The answer is you wait. And I had patients who waited 1 full year to get a social security number for their child. And this allowed them to skip the vaccines and skip even discussion vaccines the first year if they just didn't take the baby to the hospital. And there was no need to, because the baby didn't get vaccines, so it means he wasn't sickly, he wasn't sick. So skip vaccines if you can until age 5, and then homeschool from there. So what you do then is for the first year, you simply have this baby and raise this baby and take care of this baby and breastfeed this baby. And after a year, if you want to, you can apply for a Social Security number. No, you're not going to get your tax deduction, but sometimes there's a small price to pay for a healthy kid. Then what else can you do? Do not request an increase in food stamps. Don't add the baby to your insurance, and so on. To send any red flag to Child Protective Services or whoever that there might be another baby in the house. If the baby gets sick, sure, add them to your insurance. No problem. Now, you have to remember, you're likely having one of the additional 100 babies in 1,000 that would have died had you got prenatal care. Prenatal care is characterized by increased fetal loss in the first trimester, and those are babies that would have gone all the way to birth. And so when you look at the infant mortality rate of 6 per 1,000, it's actually deceptively low, because there's a lot of other loss along the way. And there's a calculation I've done to determine at what point is murder by medicine a greater threat than the disease itself. And the answer is if the death rate from a condition is greater than 1.25%, then the death rate from the illness is likely to be greater than the death rate from therapy. And this is because approximately 38% of the deaths in the United States are due to medical care that's received. And if you do population comparisons, there's evidence that this shortens people's life expectancy anywhere from 2 to 7 years on average. So what does this mean, you know, in terms of what we're looking at here? Since having a baby has a death rate, maternal and fetal, of less than 1%, in other words, less than 10 per 1,000, then it's an area clearly where medical intervention is on balance not of benefit. It's in the United States. Now, you're going to read about, and I, when all the internet read about this, oh, these third world countries and these women are having all these problems with deliveries and the women are dying and the babies are dying because they didn't have any medical care. Then they go on to say, well, they're drinking sewage water. And, well, we did get to give medical care for some of them, and, of course, medical care didn't help. Well, it's tough to improve someone's health while they're drinking sewage water. Now, in the United States, this is not, well, we don't think it's an issue, but if you think it is, just a simple water purifier will take care of that. So we've got this baby born. You're now a couple, at least a year out. Kid's done fine. And if you want to, now is the time to get a Social Security number. But quite frankly, you can wait as long as you want. There's really not any pressure to do it. Unless you're going to do some kind of heavy-duty traveling, you need to get a passport or something. Now, additional things to take a look at. What about C-sections? Or how do you know when your home delivery attempt should be aborted? There's a good question. Contractions come. They last for anywhere from 1 to 3 minutes, and they go. They come, and they go. So any pain that comes and doesn't leave, there is a problem. That's not a contraction. That's something else. So that might be time to go check things out. Then there's bleeding. For lay people, it can be difficult to estimate blood loss. But if you have blood loss of greater than, let's say, 2 tablespoons prior to birth, and the blood loss is associated with some pain, that might be time to, you know, go to your local hospital. Many women prefer to have a doctor backup. In other words, they'll go see a doctor for prenatal care, having no intention of delivering at the hospital, of course not telling the doctor of their intentions. And then if they have a difficulty with the home birth, they'll just call a doctor and say, hey, I'm coming to the hospital. And, you know, that's okay too. That works. Doctor's happy. He gets paid. Hospital's happy, they get paid. Now, so what about things like a placenta previa? Placenta previa means the placenta is blocking the exit, and as the baby's head comes down and tries to go out, it hemorrhages all these blood vessels and kills the baby and the mother, potentially. This can be diagnosed many ways. Simplest way to diagnose it is, in the third trimester, you have this baby in your belly. The baby drops. If the baby does not drop, it means there's something in the way. Excuse me, I'm coughing here. Whatever that something is, not good. So at that point, you stick your hand up there, and if what you feel is something soft, that soft thing is a placenta, you get placenta previa, you should go to the hospital. Now, that's the quickest and easiest way to diagnose it, because you're not waiting for any bleeding or any disaster to happen. But if the baby does not drop, then that's your sign to do a pelvic exam. And when you put your hand up there, you should feel a skull, basically a hard skull. So if you don't have any questions, it's a good time to ask them, because we have like 7 minutes left. So you can click your question button. So it's for having a baby at home, it's definitely a lot safer. It's a lot easier. Women are more comfortable. Labor goes quicker and goes much easier. Now, what can you do as a non-pregnant person who would like to be supportive? Well, of course, gifts are always welcome. What should you give? Well, first of all, you can ask the lady what she wants and just give her whatever she asks for. But most first-time mothers don't really know what they need. What they really need is somebody to cook as soon as they go into labor. They need someone to cook once they go into labor so they have something to eat when labor is done. Most women, the first time around, don't realize this, and they are so appreciative just to have some food. All right, we have one question here. Here we are. Yes, you're on the air.
Jennifer, Bill Witt.
Hi, Bill.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
What do you do about the legal need throughout your life for a birth certificate?
Oh, you eventually get that. You're going to eventually get it. You just want to put it off so you can avoid the immunizations, which is the second leading cause of infant mortality. So if you put put this off till after the first year of life, then you've escaped that infant mortality issue.
But then how do you get it?
Oh, many ways. I was a co-conspirator when I was in practice, and so anyone who wanted to have babies at home, fine. Bring the baby in. I'll document, I saw the baby. And, they then take that medical record. They go down to the Bureau of Vital Statistics, and on the basis of the medical note that I wrote saying, on this day, baby so-and-so was born at this time, done, the birth certificate is issued.
So you give them the date the baby was actually born or a date a year later?
I give them the date the baby was actually born. So they would bring the baby to see me. So you need to take your baby to see one of two people, either a doctor who's sympathetic or your minister or priest will do.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so you have to take the baby someplace within the first couple of weeks or so. And, you know, before you have the baby, you want to cast around. You don't want to go see someone who's going to squeal on you, so to speak, or blow you into Child Protective.
Right.
Because you've had a healthy baby, right? What's the harm?
Yeah, so probably the minister or the priest is the one that you trust the most.
Yeah, some people now, maybe they're trying to use a chiropractor or something.
Okay.
Yeah, all right, thank
okay.
you.
All right, thank you.
That's another thing I forgot to mention is let's say you have a breech delivery. What do you do with this breech? It turns out if you have a friend who's an acupuncturist, moxibustion has been proven in studies done by doctors, to take a breech, turn the breech around so that it can be a vaginal delivery. So if you have a baby that's breech, again, breech is one reason that the baby will not drop properly. So the baby doesn't drop. Someone will do a pelvic exam or feel the belly and see the head's up and the butt's down. And you just have moxibustion, the baby flips around, then you have a vaginal delivery. Another problem is male presentation. The head's turned to the left, not the right, or vice versa. And for that, a chiropractor skilled in obstetrical chiropractic can turn the baby just a little bit via massage, and the baby pops out. So those are two things that can happen that you can kind of plan for by just having those two people kind of in the wings. Okay, you're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Jennifer. This is Uncle Rick.
Oh, hi, Uncle Rick.
Thank you so much for doing this show. And I feel so bad that I was so ignorant during the birth of my son and allowed him to be born in the hospital and immunized and so many other things that were unhealthy for him. I really do appreciate it. One of the things that I noticed in your talk was that the use of cayenne is an amazing stopper of bleeding. And
right.
So maybe one day you might want to do a show on how cayenne, even gushing bleeding from gunshot wounds, according to Dr. Samuel Thompson. And thank you so much for doing this show. Really do appreciate it.
Oh, you're absolutely, absolutely welcome. Okay, we have three more minutes. If there's another question there, if not, I'd like to say cayenne is very helpful for inducing labor. It is just as like a miracle. But if you take cayenne in your first 25 weeks of pregnancy, it is not good, because it can induce preterm labor. So you really want to be a little careful with that. Some people are also irritated by garlic, and all you have to do for that really, though, is just cook your garlic, and then you're okay. But a lot of these herbs are extremely powerful and far, far, far more effective than the medications available. For example, doctors don't have a single effective medication to induce labor, and the medicines they do use cause maternal and fetal mortality. Very, very dangerous. When it's simply a teaspoon of cayenne pepper, boom, baby's out in hours. But doctors are not allowed to recommend anything that is not approved of by the medical industrial complex. So with natural methods, you can induce labor at will. Preventing preterm labor with lobelia is also very, very effective. Well, with 60 seconds, our show is coming to a close. I invite people to email suggestions for future shows. I don't have a topic picked out for next week, so I'm going to wait until maybe I get inspired, and then I'm going to, you know, take it from there. So do email and let me know what you want to hear about. And in any case, I'll think of something, and we'll see you again next week. Thank you very much. Oh, remember our sponsor, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? Look and feel 20 years younger at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. Shipping is free for a limited time. Okay. Good night. Oh.